All right, so we had in the state of Kentucky, we had our budget year this year, which means that we had pretty much a double length in session time. Just coming out of a primary, we had more vote than we thought. But it was still only what 15% turnout, but that's better than we
Yeah, it
thought.
wasn't. Statewide, it was less than that, actually. I think it was about 12%, a little over 12%, and so or 12 to 15, somewhere in that range. It was it was a typical primary turnout, you know. So yeah, it was. Of course, the you know we you know we had we saw. A lot of we saw people who were motivated. Motivated voters could make a difference, in particularly in elections where there's not a big turnout. You know, so if you the most motivated group of voters can make a big difference. And we actually saw some of that work for the good this time. There were some opponents of school choice who either lost their seats in the House of Representatives or were defeated in an attempt to retake a seat that they had had. So, for example, Representative Ed Massey in Northern Kentucky, who is tied in pretty tight with the public education establishment, he tried to take his seat back after he had lost it 2 years ago, and he was defeated by a school choice supporter. A representative in Lexington also was defeated, which was that was one of the big surprises of the primary, was that Representative T.J. Killamay in Lexington was defeated in his attempt for reelection. So, Timothy, I should say, is his last name. So, so you know, I think that that's an indication that education freedom and choice has now become the top issue in our state in these elections. We saw that was a major issue. So Aaron Reed won. Aaron Reed defeated Senator Adrian Southworth in the Republican primary over in central Kentucky and Anderson and Frankfort in that area. Of course, Senator Southworth had been a Tea Party, you know, product of the Tea Party, was formerly directed the, you know, some grassroots groups here, Take Back Kentucky, which is a very good group. They really understand legislation and they're true conservatives. But she lost in her primary against Aaron Reed, a former Navy SEAL, who made school choice a top priority of his campaign, and in fact defeated another Navy SEAL who did not make school choice a top issue. So, so you know, I know we've talked a lot about school choice on here, but even in the election, it in the primaries for Republican seats, it made a big difference. So, I was down in I was out in Jackson County. Last week out in the mountains, it's a very rural area and rural school district, and I was asked to come out there and lead a community discussion about the school choice constitutional amendment that's going to be on the ballot this fall. And that area is represented by Representative Timmy Truitt, who also voted against the constitutional amendment and has voted against school choice, is an elementary school principal out there. And so we're going to have some meeting of the minds here, I think, in the next election, because you've got, you know, you've got Republicans who are being voted out. Now, he did, I don't think he had a primary, but so he escaped that. But, you know, we're seeing finally Republicans in rural areas who are rising up and saying, you're going to support this, or we're going to find somebody who will. And I think that's the right thing to do. So,
now, let me ask you this about this November constitutional amendment that we're voting on, because I think it is important. I think a lot of people don't even know we're doing that. And so we have not been, and I don't mean to be critical. I'm just trying to be honest. I don't know if we've always been great at our constitutional amendment clarity. So what do we do with this? How do we get the word out? What's who's responsible for writing this amendment? And how do we make sure the clarity is there so that people realize what they're voting for? Because I feel like in the past, even as simple as it was, say yes to the abortion amendment, it still felt like some people were confused. And I don't know if you can get everybody on the same page, but how do we do better at this one than we maybe did with the say yes amendment?
Yeah. So the amendment has already, or the question has already been written. And you're absolutely right, brother. We spent a lot of time on this amendment for the very reason that you said, that in recent elections, constitutional amendments have run into the issue of not being easily understood or being too full of legal language or confusing, too long. So what you're going to see on the ballot is really about three. I think it's three sentences, and here's what it will say. I'll just read it right now. It'll say, to give parents choices and educational opportunities for their children, are you in favor of enabling the General Assembly to provide financial support for the education costs of students in kindergarten through 12th grade who are outside the system of common public schools by amending the Constitution as stated below? And then it will have the actual constitutional amendment language, which says, the General Assembly may provide financial support for the education of students outside the system of common schools. The General Assembly may exercise this authority by law, sections 59, 60, 171, 183, 184, 186, and 189 of this Constitution, notwithstanding. And that simply means that anything in the Constitution previously does not prevent the legislature from passing school choice programs that we see in most other states. Now, I think that's fairly simple for a constitutional amendment. What's your thought on that from what I just read?
I think it's good. I was reading some too. As you was reading it, I was looking at some other things as well that has circulated on the internet about it. And I feel like it's better. I think a lot of times people's detach from the conversation of school choice unless it's something passionate to you. And I think that's where, and it may not even be the actual wording on the ballot as much as it is the circulation of conversation throughout the community and getting that conversation. Because honestly, a lot of people don't even know we're voting for it in November, and politicians, especially for it, when they're talking out in public, they really need to be, in my opinion, pushing this and getting the word out and explaining and answering questions about it.
Well, I think you're going to see that ramp up here. People in a general election begin to really pay attention really after Labor Day or at Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And so I think that time period is going to be critical. But what we're doing right now is very critical in really holding some discussions statewide, mm-hmm. Formal and informal, about this. So let me say, if there are folks in this listening audience who want to know more about that, I'm happy to talk to you about it. I'm happy to come. We had a tremendous response out in Jackson County the other night, and we've got people out there that are now beginning to make sure that their friends and family and people they know in their community know what this is. Mm-hmm. So really what this is this simply clarifies that the Constitution of Kentucky does not prevent school choice programs from being passed by the General Assembly. That would provide, some financial support for families. So here's the thing is, we've got school choice programs for non-public schools like Bethel Christian Academy, like other non-public schools in 33 states in America. So this is not a new idea. It's not a radical idea. It's not something that's going to destroy our public education system. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have found that in states that have lots of school choice, like Florida, like Arizona, even California, their public education systems, in terms of their academic performance, are improving. So this is a good thing for public education, which is what we're talking about. But let me just also add this. There's going to be two amendments on this ballot. And both of them are similar in this sense. They simply clarify that the Constitution, first of all, requires that you be a citizen to vote. That's constitutional amendment number one. You have to be a citizen to vote. Now, you would think that would already be in force, and to a certain extent it is, but across the country we've seen some cities and localities, run by liberals like Chicago and New York City, try to allow non-citizens, even illegal immigrants, to vote. So this would simply clarify you have to be a citizen to vote in any election in Kentucky, state or local or national. Now, the other amendment is the School Choice Amendment, which simply clarifies that the Constitution does not prevent the legislature from passing a school choice program. This amendment does not determine what that program is going to be. It does not. This amendment is not legislation. It's not a law. It's not a policy. It simply removes the obstacle to doing that. So this will allow the legislature to come back and pass a school choice program, debate it, decide what's best for Kentucky. This will simply clear the way for them to do that. The problem we've had, and the reason this is needed, is because all of the school choice programs that have been passed in the past few years, which the legislature has done a great job of passing, but the courts have stymied them. The courts have killed them over this phrase about common schools. So the Bluegrass Institute, my organization, is preparing an amicus brief. Chad Meredith, who was the former Solicitor General during Governor Matt Bevin's administration and is also the son of Senator Stephen Meredith, that represents many folks in the listening mm-hmm. area, he is right now working and is almost finished with a draft for an amicus brief to weigh in on the charter school case that was filed by opponents. So here what we have is we have opponents of education choice. Primarily, they are superintendents of public school districts and teachers' unions, and they are trying to stop school choice by using our Constitution and two words in it, common schools, to say that the Constitution prevents a tax credit scholarship or a voucher or a charter school from being funded. That's what they're using that for. So this amendment will simply say that does not prevent the legislature from passing school choice programs. It does not determine what kind of program it will be or what will come to Kentucky. That's a discussion for the next General Assembly. But for this year, the election simply includes in the Constitution protection, really, for education choice. That's all it does. And so even if you're not sure whether you're for this or not, we should at least have a debate about it. We should at least consider it, mm-hmm. especially considering the fact that all these other states have it, and they're all outperforming our public education system, and many of them are attracting economic opportunities that we don't have here. So all seven of our states, rather, all seven of them have these school choice programs. So this is not, if this was going to be destructive or a bad idea, we would know it by now. We would be able to see it by now. But as a matter of fact, the only thing we can see is positive results. And then we've had a few bad charter schools. You'll hear about those. They've closed. But we've got 8,000 charter schools that are operating today. 3.7 million kids are in charter schools today, or they were this year in America. And 928,000 students, almost a million students, are in a school of choice because they got a scholarship, because they got financial help. So that's what we need for Kentucky as well.
Well, we're pushing about 8 minutes, Brother Jim. I know it never seems like time's enough. What's some takes on coming out of this General Assembly, the budget, and whatever? Right. I'm just going to kind of give you free ranks. I know we don't have a lot of time, so.
Well, I think we're on track again because of the way that the legislature dealt with the budget. I think we're on track again to see another reduction in our income tax rate, not this coming year, but the following year. And the legislature will get the final numbers for the fiscal year that we've had, the revenue that the state has brought in. They'll get those in the fall. And so I anticipate that in the next General Assembly, they will vote and approve another 0.5% reduction in the individual income tax rate. And the reason they're going to be able to do that is because this year they passed really two budget bills. House Bill 1 was the one-time spending bills, and then House Bill 6 was the general budget. So by separating those, they were able to really set us up for further tax rate reductions, because the one-time spending decisions, which involved the rainy day fund and the emergency funds that the state has received from COVID, all that, those dollars there, those do not count when you're considering whether to cut the individual income tax rate, because that's about ongoing revenue. So the House Bill 6, which was the general budget, is about revenue that's needed and how that will be spent from year to year, whereas the other projects were simply one and done. They were one-time projects, maybe a needed road project or a needed building project, whatever that might be. So I really commend our legislators for the way they handle the budget. That's the most important thing that happens in the General Assembly. The other thing that they passed was an omnibus crime bill, which had 14 different parts. Honestly, I think a lot of that was political posturing. I'm not convinced that a lot of that will benefit in reducing crime. It's going to increase sentences. It's going to increase the number of inmates we have, most likely, and the cost of incarceration. But I'm not convinced that a lot of it's going to really be that dramatic in terms of a positive effect on crime. Now, crime is—it's important to deal with it, but I think some more time and study is needed to see what is actually working, and to try to move in that direction. But you know, it's an election year, and I get it. And you know, Republicans, particularly in Louisville, wanted to send a message, and so that bill passed. It was approved a little bit along the way, but I think there's a lot of questions about it, and I think it's going to cost us a lot of money, and I'm not sure it's going to be worth it. So we'll see. But but that's the problem when you deal with issues like crime. I think emotion and drama, you know, play too big of a role in the legislation of it, so in dealing with it.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. And and the Bluegrass Institute, of course, we base our policy proposals and we determine whether policies are successes or not by if they actually have you know, demonstrable impact, and we could actually measure their impact and measure their effect. And so, you know, it's not just about emotion, it's about whether it's actually benefiting the people of Kentucky. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, can I know we got 2 minutes here. Let me ask, we may not even have time to answer this, but if you can in 1 minute, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
How do we begin to pull the younger people in more? In that low 20s, high teens, mid 20s to these conversations?
Well, that's a longer discussion, but I think understanding how they, understanding that this generation coming along now, I think, is going to be more fiscally responsible. I think they're going to see a lot of the mistakes that our generation made in terms of spending and debt, and I think they're going to take a strong stand against that. I think, however, on social and cultural issues, there's reason for great concern about whether they have a solid, you know, biblical foundation and Christian foundation, mm-hmm. and whether they understand the real history of our nation. So I think those are the challenges we face. But social media is going to continue to play a big role in reaching young people through that, I think is going to be really important, figuring out how to communicate with him. And but it can be done, and I'm not pessimistic. I'm optimistic that this generation, we're going to see some more positive things than maybe we have with millennials or with boomers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the short answer. But,
maybe
but
in July.
If anybody wants me to come and discuss this fall's constitutional amendment, just remember, we're for the Second Amendment in Kentucky, and guess what? This is the Second Amendment on the ballot. Just remember that.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to come and discuss and really explain it more if people are interested. And if that's a small group, that's fine. If it's larger, that's fine. Happy to educate people about this.
All right. So, now, where can we find more about BIPS?
You can find us online at BIPS.org, BIPPS.org. You can find my column in the Bluegrass Beacon column in newspapers and publications statewide.
Amen. Well, Brother Jim, as always, thank you so much for coming on. We look forward
thank
to
you.
Our first Monday of month to be edumacated here, as we call it in the royal part. If
sound like Brother Ron.
That's well, I'm taking some of his. If he can say. How do you used to say
informative?
Then I can say edumacated.
Okay, I'll try to keep that. I'll try to use that too once in a while.
All right. Well, thank you.
Hey, great to be with you all, and please inform yourself about this amendment and reach out if you need more information. JayWaters@freedomkentucky.com. Thank you all.
Thank you, Brother Jim. Have a blessed day.
You too. Be blessed.
All right. Well, good interview. I'm still not for sure about this Team Shark thing. I think there was some bias because of Baby Shark. But it is good to be here on this Monday morning. We're praying for you. Praying you had a blessed day. We'll be back tomorrow, 7 a.m. Central Time, here on Mornings of Box 2 Radio on the Box 2 Radio Network.